What's going on with dance and stuff? What's happening with dance and things? What's going on? What's happening? What's going on with dance and stuff?
Ding dong, anxiety calling.
Hello.
Hi, I just wanted to come in and talk to you about a couple things. One's called COVID and the other one's called Trump. Can I talk to you for a few minutes? No, thank you. Oh, no, please, could I just use your bathroom? No, please, go away. Oh, my God.
They won't leave. They're still here.
Oh, my God. It's really... I made the mistake of watching... Well, it's not that mistake. I watched BBC News just, you know, to get a...
an outsider's perspective. Yeah.
To feel so ashamed.
Oh, yeah.
To just feel so ashamed. And they were talking about Brazil and the amount of cases there. And they were like, which of course, and they're following very closely behind India, which is following America.
Well, it's true.
And then the CDC now, you know how they were saying close contacts was 15 minutes? Today the CDC was like, we meant 15 minutes total. So if you spent like a couple minutes and then like another three, maybe another five, and then seven, and then another three, then you've got it.
I don't even understand what that... What are you talking about?
So close contacts, when the CDC was doing contact tracing, it was... they would contact anyone who you had been exposed if you had COVID. And if you had been exposed... like, exposed someone for more than 15 minutes in your presence... under 6 feet.
Oh, well, in my mind, I'm like, if you have COVID and you need to contact trace, it's like if you were less than 6 feet away from a person for like a second. I mean, shouldn't...
same.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, 15
That's
minutes.
Not who the CDC has been contacting. No, the CDC was like this 15-minute thing, and they just today were like, actually, we mean 15 minutes total. So if you spent like a few minutes here and there and all together equaled 15... that's bad. It's like, what are you? Who are you?
Whatever. There's like, it's just like, be good. 15 minutes sounds like the most arbitrary kind of rule I've ever heard.
Can you imagine?
No, it's so weird. It's like, just wear your mask and be careful.
Wear your masks. I did watch this incredible advertisement today of Disney World with everyone in masks enjoying Disney World. And I was like, just imagine where we were last November.
I don't...
what day is it? Wait, it's October. We're in October.
I do not remember last October.
You don't? What were we doing?
Not a clue.
Well, we were recording our television show, which, ladies and gentlemen, you can absolutely still watch on our YouTube channel. Like, subscribe. And we were recording it in that... place in Wall Street.
that place in Wall Street. Yes, thank you, LMCC, for that space that you granted to us so graciously. October, what was it? I remember I was dressing Misty Copeland for Fall for Dance because it's Fall for Dance season.
It is Fall for Dance. And I felt really excited to finally get a commission from Fall for Dance to present a virtual work called Bloodbath, which was me thrashing around in a kiddie pool filled with fake blood.
I do think actually this virtual Fall for Dance season would have been an ideal platform for you to get a commission. So because it'd be close up. It's close up.
It would have been. It absolutely could have been some real acting.
Yes.
And
you could have done camera angles. You could have said close up on my face. Never leave beyond my neck.
So thank you again, Fall for Dance, for the commission for Bloodbath. And I really was happy about it.
Well, thank
you. You did designs again this fall for dance.
Designs. Harriet and I did pajamas for David Hallberg and Sarah Mearns, and they're dancing mm-hmm. around in them online right now. You can go watch it.
Oh, amazing. Amazing. Something else one can watch online, if you're one of our patrons, your Patreon, is Possession.
Oh my God.
I mean, it's not, it is up there in my top five movies.
I can't.
And it is a movie that has deeply influenced many a choreographer and theater maker.
I can see the influence, yes.
So I've seen this movie, I don't know, over 10 times.
Wow.
I've definitely seen parts of it many, many times.
Wow.
And I really relate to the part where she's walking away from Sam Neill and she turns around and screams, "Leave me alone," with a mouth dripping of blood.
Yes. Right after ran in front of that truck just to try to kill not only herself, but everyone around.
Well, she kind of runs in front of it and then runs away from it just to make it like crash into everything.
Yes. Wow. I understood why you like it while I was watching it, but I was upset that I was being forced to lay my eyes on this film.
Wow. Wow. I cannot believe.
You can't.
It's beautiful, Sam Neill.
Sam Neill is gorgeous. Although I have to say, like, watching two people who are performing, you know, a kind of like psychosexual anxiety from that they're at 100 from the beginning and they go up to like 1,000 million by the end from the opening scene. They are at 100. They never go below it ever. So I could never at any moment feel actually like attracted to Sam Neill because I am not attracted to insane people.
Wow. When he is in that hotel, when he goes to the hotel room and he's just like freaking out and rolling around in the bed, I'm just like, oh, honey, yes, work. Let's kiss.
Ugh.
Like, so like he's
in the filthy hotel room on the filthy sheets with a person who's absolutely lost their mind.
Sure. Been there. Been there. Absolutely have dated people like that.
Oh, awful.
I remember seeing that movie with this guy who was like straight-ish and or not, like we made out after, but it was a real, like, he was like, I really need you to see this movie. And the other person who had really been like, you have to see this movie is Courtney Krantz. Like for years, Courtney was like, you have to see this movie. You're going to lose your mind. This is like a movie for you. And so, you know, it took this heteroflexible guy to take me to the Sejani Festival at BAM. And when the movie began, he like gripped my hand and like held it through the whole film. He was like, there is a scene that's going to happen in a subway that you're going to, he's like, when it happens, I think you're going to lose your mind. And when that scene happened, I was basically like in ecstasy. I couldn't believe it. So let's talk through this movie.
Okay,
it begins at 100 with Sam Neill arriving back from some kind of perhaps spy work for East or West Germany.
Yes.
They do live at the wall.
Yes.
I have a sense that where do you think they are, East or West?
They're in West.
Okay, work. Well, there you go. Did it say in the beginning?
I looked up online where the film was shot because this was still pre the wall. I mean, the mm-hmm. film, so we have to assume that they're in West Berlin.
Mm-hmm. It's made by the director's name is Zulowski, his last name, and he met a woman at a party who was interested in financing a film, and he had just gone through a breakup, and he was like, "I'd love to make a movie," and kind of about my breakup, and she financed this movie.
My God.
That's how this movie got made.
Zulowski,
because
wow, he hates women.
Polish.
Or something happened.
No. I don't think he hates women.
Jack.
Yes.
Wow. Yes. He's like, I was dumped by a woman that I couldn't satisfy. I'm going to make a movie about a woman who's so dissatisfied by her husband that she becomes like a murderous witch.
Okay, so that's your reading of it. My reading of it is that this couple together are unsatisfied kind of with each other. He's unsatisfied with her too. They have a breakup. And the emotions around their breakup are so big that they create the Antichrist.
That is an explanation for this film that makes as much sense as basically anything you could say.
Absolutely.
And you know, when the film opened and we were treated to these beautiful shots of these gorgeous interiors with these insane wall-to-wall carpets, I was like, oh, maybe I'm about to be treated to a very severe Kramer versus Kramer, right? Okay.
Fierce. Uh-huh. Sure.
And in a way.
In a way you were.
Yeah. In a way.
Mm-hmm. They do have a child.
And this is problematic to me.
Okay.
I mean, it certainly does amp up the trauma porn aspect of this film.
That they have a child?
Oh, yeah, because we're not just faced with these dissatisfied married people, these dissatisfied straight married people who are so crazed in their feelings over this breakup that they both murder, they both spew blood. Orifices. They both cut themselves.
They absolutely leave that child alone and in the apartment for like weeks.
But yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. All of those things they do pale in comparison to the child abuse that both of them inflict on this child.
Of course.
So having to sit through the child abuse aspects of this film were the most disturbing.
Well, and not only him, but also when she, I guess, is also a ballet teacher, where she like horribly abuses that ballet student.
In that one kind of like non sequitur of a scene where they're like, oh, by the way.
Where they're like,
she's a ballet teacher.
Where they're like, and she also taught ballet. So there's so many things I love about the movie. She's in the same dress for the whole film.
I do love that dress.
That dress.
I love the filthy dress with the buttons in the back. I loved it.
That gets so dirty as the film goes on.
Look, I mean, I can't take away from this movie that mostly it's incredibly chic. And it just makes, I mean, even in 1981, things could be very chic.
Yes. It's incredibly chic. They meet, they're having some sort of breakup. I mean, the scene where they have a fight about what they're going to do about their child and their relationship in a cafe that has a corner mirror that they're sitting at, that somehow they shot amazingly so you don't see the cameras. And there's these mirrors where they're sitting in this corner banquette fighting with each other on opposite sides. Iconic. And then when she runs out of the cafe, just throwing chairs behind her so that he can't get her.
They do a very violent cafe.
Mueller, absolutely.
They literally destroy the place.
It's incredible. And then all those chefs jump on him.
I mean, the wave of destruction they leave was... I don't like destructive movies. I find them very upsetting. I'm like, clean that up. Clean that up.
I see.
Watching her do the meat grinder, oh.
Oh, loved it. Loved it.
Disgusting.
Loved.
Getting her fingers all in there.
And she just like was pushing the meat through the meat grinder while in a dissociative state because she has to go back to her demon lover, which is also her ex-husband or her husband. I mean, the thing that's created, which is created in the subway, is ultimately when the big subway moment, which is an iconic iconic dance scene, which a lot of contemporary choreographers are going to draw from. I mean, think about it.
Interesting.
Think about it.
Well, I mean, it's just kind of this like unhinged release of energy and screaming. I really worried for Isabella Gianni's larynx throughout the whole film with the amount of screaming she does.
So much screaming.
Full tilt screaming.
So much screaming. I can think of so many performances I've seen that I was like, that was, yeah, that was that. Like, it was...
But I don't like performance where people pretend to be insane.
Mm.
I mean, I tend to not like, and I found big parts of her performance too broad.
I find Ajani's performance in this film, words that come to mind... immaculate, iconic,
uh-huh.
Zeitgeist shattering.
Wow.
I mean, I feel that she delivers, and I do feel that this film, when it comes out, and when we sort of think of like the titans of French female actresses of, you know, pre, but certainly beginning, feeling like it's coming into its own with Deneuve, and then you have Ajani and Hubert and Binoche,
mm-hmm.
and who are all going to,
they all have
do crazy in various ways.
Different ways. Yes, very different.
In different ways. I think your favorite is probably Binoche.
Because
she gives the warmest crazy.
She does, but I can appreciate the frozen crazy of Isabelle Huppert.
Absolutely. I mean...
But I don't love this kind of like manic, unnuanced crazy of Isabelle Ajani.
I absolutely love it. I love it so much. The subway scene was where she... And what she talks about and she says to... Sam Neill is that she's telling this story of sister Faith and sister Chance, and that what she miscarried when she has this miscarriage in the subway after this possession. This,
oh my God.
This sort of possession where just before it, she's been like kind of whimpering in front of the crucifix, hoping that maybe Christ can save her.
Uh huh.
And that what she miscarried there is sister Faith, and all that's left is sister Chance. And we just go into this full chaos reigns moment. I mean, I don't think there is no way that you could ever see. I was just talking about it today with Jeremy. Antichrist by Lars von Trier. If you didn't like this movie, you would hate that movie.
Ugh.
Because he dials up. I absolutely do think you are correct in this playing with the idea of, you know, the sort of Eve, Lilith, or, you know, the dark and light. Because Ajani also appears as a very good school teacher, right? Who comes to take care of, who in green contacts and a weave, who comes to...
I wouldn't call that a weave. I would call that just a straight up wig.
Just a big wig.
A big long wig.
Just a big braid wig.
Yeah.
And like really comes right out of the package braided. And, you know, that's the good side of the idea of, you know, whatever's... It's the men in the movie, to me, are also sort of pathetic and dumb and, you know, they're, like, trying... There's, like, her stupid German spiritualist boyfriend who is her sort of lover.
Heinrich, who do we know who this actor is? Because I want to imagine
he's
that
he's iconic. He's been in other things for sure.
I just feel like this person's a dancer because his like physical performance was like so graceful, and he was like not very good at acting aside from just like being overacting.
And here's the thing. I think I literally, everyone is incredible in this movie. A+ acting all around. This is the kind of acting I want to see.
Well, I thought Bob was really good. Don't open it. I thought Bob was good. Yeah.
Wee-oo. Uh-huh. Him doing wee-oo and running into the bathtub.
Drowning himself. Very hard thing to do in that way.
God, everyone's incredible in this movie. I love it. It's so chic. But Heinrich is, I don't know, he's maybe he's in the Pina Bausch company, and that's where we are like, he looks so familiar.
Well, yeah, and then he had incredible kind of dexterity and balance and stuff. In his fight, in his first fight with Sam Neill at the apartment, he was doing, it was, I mean, obviously highly choreographed. Everything in this movie was just like movement blocking. But he was really good. I mean, yeah, they all deliver exceptional performances energetically. I will give you that.
There's a very famous Fassbinder actress who plays like the nosy friend who ends up like getting her leg broken.
Margie or whatever.
Margie. Yeah. Why? Oh, she gets killed because she goes into the apartment and the thing kills her.
I do have that question in my notes. Why is Marg dead?
She gets her throat slashed, I think, and but it's, she's coming down in the elevator, and Sam Neill kind of like rushes her back upstairs, and he was like, "Is it in here?" And Johnny's like, "Yes," and Johnny has to get it out, so he deals with wrapping up Marg in a
plastic, very loud plastic bag,
in a loud plastic bag, and then putting her into a car. And then, I mean, also when you imagine that this guy was like, oh, can you finance my film? And a woman was like, okay. And then finances things like that crazy scene where the car drives full speed into the cops while he like rolls out of the car and like things just explode everywhere. I mean,
there was that beautiful shot of Sam Neill riding that motorcycle at a million miles an hour through those brick archways.
Oh, yeah. That then he just, like, decides to crash out on.
And then some incredible stunt double literally rolls, like, 5,000 feet after diving off this motorcycle. That was good.
Also, the shot where he's talking to his intelligence committee about, like, the man he's been spying on.
So beautiful.
Shot or goes in this circular motion around it, and then something around pink socks, and then Aretha think about like pink and communist, etc., blah blah blah. But I there's a gay couple who's dispatched.
Oh my god,
the gay detectives, the
private detective who end up turning, they get chopped up and put in the fridge, and then they end up looking like weird pieces of like molded cake. With eyes
Yeah, and Sam Neill eventually kills Heinrich by pretending to throw up for some reason.
Right.
He lures Heinrich into the bathroom. He takes an old dirty feather out of a garbage can. And tickles the back of his throat to make himself throw up so that Heinrich comes, and then he smashes Heinrich's head in.
Yeah, on the toilet.
With that top of the toilet thing, and then sticks his head in the toilet after he's jammed the toilet up with his shoe, and then covers Heinrich in like hashish.
Drowns him in the toilet.
And then goes back to her apartment and blows her apartment up because that's where all the dead bodies are.
And rather than open the door to the stall, he climbs over the stall to leave the stall. Very strange.
Everything about the movie is, you're absolutely right. It starts at 100 and goes to 1,000. And I have had breakups that have felt just like that. Where you feel like you are being turned into someone else that is like, and you absolutely, I have absolutely gone through breakups where I've been like, have I been dating a demon? Like, I mean, and has this breakup made the Antichrist? Like, my God, it is.
Wow.
I mean, for many people, Midsommar was like their big, it was like their breakup film. Like, this is a great film for a breakup. And I'm like, it's Possession.
I would like to hear from you,
please,
your interpretation of the twinning at the end.
Oh, so what's happened is that Johnny's character has been feeding, has been this Antichrist that is indeed the man she's in love, that takes the form of the man who she loves, which is her ex, that she loves Sam Neill, that this, the sort of tragedy of the whole thing is that she actually does love him, but they had some bad feelings that they couldn't get over. And so it created this demon, this sort of octopus thing that she is trying to get pleasure from, but still can't. Like, there's this scene where she's having sex with it and he comes and finds her and having sex with the octopus. And she's saying, she says something like, it's not enough, or it's still not great. That's not what she says.
I wish she just nonchalant, it's still not great.
That's kind of like what ended up being my work, was having like big histrionic things with like things that were like, well, it's still not great.
Well, you have both Isabel and Isabel
I
in
am.
You. Both of them.
I am.
That's,
I am.
Oh my, Jack, why have you not made that piece? Isabel and Isabel. That's your piece.
It is really my piece.
Isabel. And it's just you at two different ways of being, different levels.
Yeah, it's absolutely, it is where I like vacillate between a Johnny and Hubert. And those really are like my two facets. And so at the end, when he understands Sam Neill, her ex, now is, he's past just his like hatred of her and understands that like this is a thing they made together. They made this thing together. And so he's also going to try to take care of this thing that they're making or have made. And that goes beyond human things. He's also excited by like her total chaos and destruction mode. He's filled with such despair that only seems the right avenue is to just sort of create and go for something that is ultimately going to destroy the world. So that's why he puts his life on the line, covers up everything for her, gets rid of Heinrich. You know, there gets to be that beautiful, to backtrack, there's a beautiful poetic moment where he goes to Heinrich's mother, who knows that Heinrich's dead because she was so enmeshed with her child. And she allows herself to die and for her soul to float out the window. The window like opens, you know, she gets to have a very peaceful death. There's a lot of like spirituality in it. So at the end, when there's this big shootout, it is that so he's chased by the cops. Sam Neill's chased by the cops. And she brings up the stairs with her, what they've made, which is him. It looks like him, but it's the Antichrist. Mm-hmm. And that's how I view it. And that their breakup made the Antichrist. And that she now, and that she loves Sam Neill and is also ready. Her part or reason for being on this planet is over. It was to like bring Satan into the world. And so she, Sam Neill, is riddled with bullets and is in a lot of pain, and she's been shot some too. And so she takes a gun and shoots herself through the back while they kiss.
She really does.
She gets
right
on top
the back
of him
of her
and
pelvis,
and kisses him while shooting herself into him. And they've arrived at the school teacher's house who's taking care of Bob. And because the Antichrist has come probably to like take their son, or it's possible that the school teacher is maybe a good element that is still really pure and good that could somehow vanquish this evil spirit. We don't get to know. It ends with the Antichrist creeping around the glass of her outside door with the sounds of missiles dropping everywhere.
Yeah, Sam Neill doing his best octopus dance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then why does Bob have to die?
I don't think Bob dies.
Jack.
So when Bob goes and jumps in the bath, he can hold his breath underwater for a long time. So I think
he goes and he's holding his breath, and then there's a moment where his body kind of like turns side, and that's when I think we're to assume that he's gone.
No, I think he's just floating. He's just in the bath. I mean, I would do that as a kid where I'd be like, I'm going to hold my breath underwater. And I think he's runs into the bathtub and is holding his breath, but I don't think he's dead.
Okay.
I don't know how a child could jump into a bathtub and immediately drown like that. He's not.
Well,
that
a lot
long.
Of things happen in this movie that can't happen.
That's absolutely true, such as, you know, giving birth to the Antichrist by a breakup and it kind of going through various forms, including a red blob into that has these sort of like weird eyes that kind of looks like a red tree stump.
Into
an octopus. It's a great movie for, I would say, it's a wonderful Venn diagram of Halloween and Valentine's Day.
I suppose.
You know, they play that, they used to, I mean, whenever we're back in New York, they'd play that movie every Valentine's Day at Anthology Film Fest, Anthology Film. Which I really appreciated.
I really appreciated the aesthetics. My favorite part of the train station scene was when she's on her back and you get to see that her nylons are the same color as her dress. Uh-huh. Which I love.
This queen who I know in Texas is a film queen, and she would like, this is, you know, back when we could go to clubs and stuff. And I remember seeing an incredible like drag performance of a queen being a Johnny in the subway scene, like in a purple dress, like screaming and like freaking out. And like,
it's a great performance piece.
Smashing. It was, seeing that movie was what inspired Witch Study number one.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Doesn't it? With me and Jacob Slominski, like that's what we were doing. Like,
except I was Witch like, Study number one was more nuanced than Possession.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I mean, Possession, I wouldn't, there is a word I would not use with this film, and that's nuanced. Although,
there are a few scenes. Like when she's doing the ballet torture where she looks to camera quietly. That was a nice shift that felt needed. Even though the girl was screaming, at least Isabella Gianni was calm.
I guess I'd still not give that quite nuance because it's direct to camera and the look is I'm a murderer.
Well, it's for camp. It's campy, campy, wampy.
Campy Wampy is another great shirt. And talk about, like, if we ever opened a camp, we would call it Campy Wampy.
Campy Wampy.
Because it would really be, this is the camp to come and have big feelings.
I have two opinion polls to ask of you.
Okay. These are, so opinion polls, what does that mean?
Well, we don't know the answer to these two questions. So it's going to be cool. Do you think that Sam Neill and Isabella Gianni were so tired when they were done filming this movie? And the second question is, do you think that they had sex ever in their lives?
I love thinking about both of these questions because I love thinking of myself as a Johnny on this shoot. And I think, so I'm going to answer as a Johnny. My answer is I was tired in the filming of this, but it was also really exhilarating because frequently you don't get to play roles like that. And yes, men get to do big action movies and women, of course, get to be in action movies too now these days. But at this point, in the early 80s, if you were a woman in a film and were going to be screaming, it was because you were being chased by a murderer and I was getting to be a murderer. So it actually felt really exhilarating. I was very fatigued at the end of most days. And at the end of the shoot, I threw up and went to bed for 3 months. In terms of me and Sam Neill, I don't like to kiss and tell, but I will say that Sam will always have a very special place in more than just my heart.
Gorgeous.
And thank you.
Yeah.
What movies do you like? You like Men Don't Leave?
I love that movie.
Do you like Tootsie?
You know, I don't think I've ever watched it from beginning to end. But you know, but I love Jessica Lange.
From beginning to end. I love Jessica Lange. She is incredible. I watched it not too long ago. Bill Murray is in it and is exceptional in
He's great.
I don't know how I felt about that movie. In some ways, I like it. And in some ways, I find it really gross and offensive.
Is it a movie that could even be made today? The plot is that he needs to get work in soaps and he can only do so as a cross-dresser.
Well, no, he comes as a woman. he like literally goes to the audition dressed up as a woman.
Yes, I understand, but he is a self-identified straight male person.
He is, but they don't know that he's a man.
Right.
For a really long
time. So it's like Mrs. Doubtfire.
It is absolutely like a Mrs. Doubtfire. And it was on Broadway just this past year, I believe, and went well.
Okay.
So it's a kind of... It's like, it's weird in that, like, there's ways where, like, the guy who's the director of the soap is really gross and is put in his place by this man who's dressed up as a woman. But there's also some things around it. I don't know. Because I remember seeing it as a kid and feeling, like, made fun of in a way through the movie, or that, like, it wasn't okay, that ultimately you had to like women and you can't, you know, it still is really on the binary, but you know, most things are.
Right. Right.
So it's not like, and it's that he falls in love with Jessica Lange and then all this sort of, and there's this whole way he reconciles with Jessica Lange's father in a bar being really like man about it. It's just, so some of that stuff is hard. But then there's other stuff that's really great. And Jessica Lange is so amazing. And there's things on the soap that, you know, it's a really great movie.
Soap Dish.
Yeah.
I know. It really is wonderful.
I love that movie. Robert Downey Jr. Wow.
Yeah. So cute.
So cute. And that sister. Can you imagine them growing up together?
Who's this? What do you mean?
Robert Downey Jr.'s sister.
Who's that?
She's in Men Don't Leave.
Joan Cusack is John Cusack's sister. Oh, you're right.
Wow, you know what? John Cusack and Robert Downey Jr. are pretty close, though. Do you know what I mean?
No. I mean, they have some similar affectation, like kind of like real cute, but like a little twitchy, you know?
Like cute, dark-haired boys. Ultimately, I guess I'd want to kiss Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, he's infinitely more beautiful, yes.
But there's this movie John Cusack's in. I think he holds like a boombox over his head.
Say Anything.
I never saw it, but I did see that part, and I remember thinking that's sweet.
Yeah, in your eyes, the light that in your eyes.
Oh, that makes me anxious. Is that a Phil Collins song?
I do believe, yeah.
Oh, God, Phil Collins makes me so anxious just hearing, just thinking about it. It's really anxiety provoking.
I love 80s movies, I have to say. 80s was interesting, huh?
80s was interesting, huh? Is iconic. That is an iconic line.
Much more interesting than the 90s or the 2000s.
I don't know, girl. I mean, the 80s was, yeah, it was really interesting, but like 90s is really pretty special. I mean, 90s, you have Batman Returns. You have
Twin Peaks. But that's just like coming off of the 80s. You know, like Batman Returns is basically the 80s.
But it's like not, because there's like the chicness to the 90s. Like the 90s become kind of chic in this way. Like, I mean, it's also Madonna at her zenith. Like, Blonde Ambition, you can't disparage that. Like, you can't.
I can.
No, you can't. Because
watch me.
No. If you saw, what is that movie called? Truth or Dare. It is truly it's so incredible. And her and the Blonde Ambition tour, I stand by being still like one of the most incredible stage shows ever. Like,
look, I think you're not wrong. Like the early 90s when we're dealing with like Isaac Mizrahi in his heyday, the heyday of supermodels,
absolutely. The heyday of
Madonna.
Absolutely.
There was something about like the excess and the fun. People were really leaning into fun in the early 90s.
Metallics. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
It
metallics.
Is, yes.
Colors.
Yes. With also a great like grunge alt scene. So you have all that going on, and then you have like Kurt Cobain coming through and like flannels beginning to happen. Like, I love that.
Yeah.
Whereas the 80s were just truly, I would say, a little more one note. Like,
but the interesting thing about the 80s is that there was this kind of reaction to the 70s and the 80s where suddenly, like, with the dawn of Reagan, people were like, let's get really old-fashioned. And suddenly there was, like, almost, like, 19 kind of 50s and 40s fashion happening. Like, it was strange. People were having their hair permed, almost as if they were having it set, like, in the olden days.
Right.
It was so... it was so, like, diffused and pastel. And
I hate pastels and I hate diffuse. I like loud, big feelings, Madonna, Possession.
Wow.
Metallics. Wow. It's true. Like, you're more 80s and I'm more 90s in that way. Like, 90s is like Verhoeven giving us Showgirls and RoboCop and Total Recall and...
Total Recall
the 80s?
I don't know.
Anyhow.
My childhood in the 80s was almost like, aesthetically, it was almost neutral. I mean, my mom has always had exceptional taste. So
absolutely.
It wasn't like we were living in a house that could be identified as the 80s, you know, unless you were to look at like the television set.
Right.
But I do, like, I have a lot of nostalgia for 80s movies.
I'm so wrong. RoboCop is the... I was like, RoboCop was definitely the 80s. It was 87.
Oh, yeah, because my brother auditioned for RoboCop 2.
Wow.
When we were living on King Street.
Wow.
Next door to Susan Sontag, who almost burned our house down.
Wait. How did Susan Sontag almost burn your house down? Talk about notes on camp. Campy wampy. Notes on campy wampy.
We had an apartment like two buildings down from where I live now. Uh-huh. And we were on the top floor. Mm-hmm. And my mom's boss was the floor below us. Mm-hmm. And then Susan Sontag had the brownstone next door to our building. Mm-hmm. And I guess there was a fire that started in Susan Sontag's apartment. And it burned the roof off of our apartment.
The roof, but not your ceiling.
Yes. The firemen came and had to make a hole in the ceiling.
Well, and then where'd you guys go live? Where'd you guys go live?
I was very small. I'll have to ask my mom.
But you guys had to go live somewhere else while your ceiling was repaired.
Yes, I think we went to stay somewhere. But I do remember the morning, like, waking up and the house was sort of, like, hazy and started getting thicker with smoke. And then my mom was like, uh-oh. And then we got out of there.
Do you remember how you got out of the apartment?
I don't.
Do you remember if your mother was frantic or was she calm?
Probably pretty calm.
Yeah. And then cut to, like, Susan Sontag, like, standing outside smoking a cigarette, being like, oh, I think I dropped, like, a cigarette of mine in a waste paper basket.
She's like, my books.
My books.
All my essays.
My notes on camp. All my notes on camp.
There's so many notes up there. Don't let them burn.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. All my notes caught on fire. Oh, wow. That's really wild.
I have been watching a show that I do believe you're going to love.
Oh, okay.
It is on Prime, Amazon Prime.
And I have called that.
The Face. And it is from 2013. And it is America's Next Top Model, essentially. Except it's also The Voice. So there's a group of 12 British aspiring models who get divided up into three teams. And each of the four girls is designated to... A supermodel. So Naomi Campbell is one.
I love her.
Team Naomi. Mm-hmm. And then there's this woman, Erin O'Connell or something. And then there's this woman, Caroline something, who's a Swedish model. But they're all.
I don't care about those.
You will care about them in this way because it's not only a competition between the models, it's almost more of a competition between the supermodel mentors because every time one of their team wins an assignment, that mentor gets to kick off a person from one of the other two teams.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. I can't wait to watch the show. I might start watching it tonight.
And Naomi Campbell is a rage addict.
I love it.
You're going to love it.
I love how angry she gets. I love...
Not only angry, but she also cannot control her laughter at people, which is such a crazy joy that she will laugh at people to their face when she thinks they've done something silly or stupid.
Don't you feel like you do that?
Yeah, Jack, it's this next level. You're not going to believe it.
Great. I mean, I feel we could really use, we all need a little to be sensitive souls, need to bring a little more Naomi Campbell into our lives. I can't wait. I'm so excited for us to review a show from 2013. That's where this podcast is going.
So random. We are going
to begin reviewing The Face, which I didn't get to see. I was, you know, a show I've never watched?
America's Next Top Model.
Are you kidding me? I loved that show. The show, as problematic. That's correct. I've never, ever watched that show. And it was on. Oh, Jeremy put it on for some reason. I can't remember why. Probably because he put the news on. And I was like, please, why are you killing me? And he like flipped and The Voice was on. And this girl was 16. Her voice was incredibly low. And she was choosing between John Legend and this woman and Gwen Stefani. Uh-huh. And there was another woman there.
Kelly Clarkson.
Yes. And then there was like this big kind of man with a beard, or you know, he looked gnarly, like some country man. Blake's McGrew. Right.
Yep. Blake's McGrew.
And I was like, what's going on? And she got to choose a mentor. I didn't know. This is a show I don't know anything about. And the reason I don't know anything about it is because I don't care. I don't like that kind of music.
Oh, yeah. No, I know. But they do that on the Face, the model.
So what I thought you were originally saying, because I only just this past week saw a moment of The Voice and Jeremy explained it to me. I thought you meant, for a brief moment, it took me a bit, that these models were going to have to sing.
Incredible.
And I was like, this show sounds
No, these amazing. Models can barely communicate with one another. It's exceptional.
Remember how incredible America's Next Top Model was?
Amazing.
Remember how incredible Tyra Banks is? Have you been watching what is that show called?
Dancing with the Stars.
My new favorite joke is, Carianna Naba, is Tyra Banks going, Carianna Naba, and Carianne going, one.
Has that happened?
No, but I would love it to happen if she's like, Carianna Naba, one. And she just holds up a one.
I wanted to be able to really watch that show this season to show up for Niamh, but it is A of all too long, and B of all like too much production. It makes me feel crazy. It's like too many noises, too many lights, too many costumes, too much. I don't like it.
It's strange. I loved when Niamh had his Fred Astaire moment. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Niamh is always doing great. Exceptional. Love watching your boyfriend.
Oh.
Alan. But something's happened where I don't know what it is. In this last episode, I think I missed a week. And by the time I caught up, I felt just really overwhelmed. I think as well by like the lights and that Tyra like yells from like start to finish, which I like in one way. I really, this past week, it was incredible. She came out and Jeremy was like, what is she wearing? And I said, a top from 39th Street between 7th and 8th.
Absolutely.
It was absolutely really, really wild. And then, but I love Tyra so much. I wish I was co-hosting this show with her. because it seems like she has to fill time a lot. It seems like she has to, like, ask them questions, interrogate, and it seems like she has... It feels the onus of the show being, like, 3 hours long is on her somehow.
Yes, and she has to manage the time. It's up to her to be like, and now we have to be done with this section, so hurry it along, and we're going to commercial break. Good night, everybody!
But it, you know, also, like, feels that she has to fill time, too, where she has to be like, well, I think that's the first time I've seen fringe on a leotard. You know, it's like she also has to fill time, and... I want to be there with her to help her with that. And I kind of basically just want to turn the show into me and Tyra talking, actually.
That'd be a much better show.
I feel I've always been so diehard Tyra, like, fan. The episode of ANTM when she's like, oh, you guys, I don't feel well. You guys, I don't. And then she, like, collapses out of the couch. And all and then the she's models, like, and all the models, like, come along, or come and freak around. She goes, "I was acting because that's the challenge this week." I remember seeing that, like, in the aughts, and being like, "This is incredible."
I do think that under just very slightly different circumstances, Tyra could have been a great actress because. Her ability to mimic is uncanny.
Yeah.
The way in which she can look at someone's face and then take on that expression is insane. It's unbelievable.
I deeply relate to it. I deeply relate. So I guess that's the show I want, is Tyra and I becoming each other. Like, she'd start mimicking me and I'd start mimicking her, and then it'd be the sum of all parts.
It'd be amazing.
And it would really be a lot of face posing. And it's just so great. I just love her. And that, God, it's so iconic when she yells at that model. It is iconic.
Oh, when she says, I believed in you.
When she screams at her. I can't remember what she goes. And she goes, stop it, stop it. Maybe she's even screaming, shut up. I don't remember what it is. And then she goes off in, like, this way that's just really,
I mean, it's for ratings, for sure.
And it got them. And I loved Miss J. I mean, when Miss J would teach them how to walk, come on.
I know. Miss J was wonderful.
And then what was the name of that other queen with the dyed blonde hair? We think we've done this recently.
J. Manuel.
And Ms. then
Angie Dickinson
was
always like, I was the first supermodel. And I'm like, well, I don't know who you are.
She was incredible. Loved her. I loved all of them. They are
Nigel
all
Barker.
Hot.
It was a great team. It was a great team.
It really was. I feel it's was really ahead of its time. And also totally of its time. So, you know, there you have it. It was really good. And then Tyra had her own show.
What do you mean? What kind of show?
She had a talk show.
Oh, right.
Remember?
Oh, Tyra. Oh, yeah, because she put Vaseline all over her face. And then she yelled at the audience to put Vaseline on their face.
Well, it was because she was doing the takeoff on when Oprah had, like, I think, given everyone a car. And she's like, if you look under your seat, you're going to find the best beauty product I've ever used. And then she started screaming, you get Vaseline and you get Vaseline. She just... I mean, that her ability to, like, act, to pump it up and to, like, drive forward, and the way she shows up for Dancing with the Stars in such a professional way, like, she really shows up as a full pro. She's like, welcome. Like, I just.
Well, I think that she sees the potential for, you know, basically to do this job until she's dead, because I think Tom Bergeron did it for 20 whatever seasons.
I don't ever need to see him again, and I'm just here for Tyra. I could have Tyra host everything. She's amazing. I love her. Well, I hope we get to interview her. I'll text Neve, and maybe we'll have Neve on, or maybe we'll get to have Tyra on. Oh, I would gag. Oh, I would lose my mind if we could have Tyra Banks on. I would lose my mind.
No. I feel like I may have watched or read something else I wanted to discuss with you, but I'm not sure. I did get a new book in the mail that I had pre-ordered, so it was a surprise, called Dessert Person by Claire Saffitz, which is a wonderful new dessert cookbook, and I have a fantasy that I want to try all the recipes in it, though I know that won't happen.
If you do even one of them, I want you to document it.
I will.
And put it on our Dance and Stuff account, because I don't know what's going on with that account. And
I feel like sometimes you really show up for that account.
Sometimes. This week is midterms. I am so tired.
I understand.
Yes, I have to write 52 midterms. While teaching and meeting with students at the same time. But we did it. We also did this job.
And, I have one more story for you.
Okay, of course.
It's actually a it's a medical update regards to your medical updates.
Oh.
And your PSA about the shingles and pneumonia vaccines.
Yes. Did you do it?
I certainly did not. But Lindsay Clark.
Oh no. I hope she didn't get shingles, did she?
Friend of the podcast, Lindsay Clark, who did not get shingles, husband has had shingles, and you have had shingles, yeah. And her best friend Stuart has had shingles.
Right.
So she's been very close to shingles.
Yeah. Well, it's not contagious. Unless you haven't had chicken pox before.
So she went into the pharmacy. Mm-hmm. She was getting, I think, her flu shot or something. And she said, also, I was looking into the shingles and pneumonia vaccines. Uh-huh. And the pharmacist was like, absolutely not. She was like, that's ridiculous. You're not at an age right now where we would administer one of those to you. And she's like, well, my friend just had shingles. And the pharmacist goes, no, he didn't.
Yes. Work. Well, honey, if you want to talk to Catherine Buza, an incredible dermatologist at Albany Dermatology, whoever pharmacy person you are, give her a call. Yeah.
And then Lindsay started crying. She got upset because this woman basically was being rude to her. And
this woman was being rude.
Yeah. And was disregarding her feelings. But then after Lindsay got really upset, the pharmacist came back and she was really overcompensating with niceness because she felt bad.
Well, did she give her but she didn't give her the vaccine. So she wasn't that nice.
She didn't.
I mean, here's the thing. The shingles vaccine, and she was like, when you get over this, you should get it. And I was like, but it makes you feel sick. Like, I know people who've gotten the shingles vaccine and it makes you feel sick. The pneumonia vaccine made me feel like shit for at least 3 days. The flu vaccine never makes me feel sick because I get it every year. But I guess some people feel sick when they get it. But I'll go get the pneumonia vaccine. Reed, you have to get the flu vaccine this year.
I am. I went actually to CVS to get it yesterday, but they don't take my insurance at CVS, but the Duane Reed and the Rite Aid both do. So I'll go to them.
I'm so glad that I got to hear both on this episode. Both.
Oh, Harry and I got a printer for our studio, and it's an eco printer. You actually pour ink into the receptacles. It's not like cartridges. And it's really good. It's really exciting to have a printer in our studio.
Yeah, what? You pour the ink into it?
Yeah, it comes in bottles.
So ink comes along.
Black, yellow, magenta, cyan, and then you click the nozzle to a hole, and then it all just goes blub 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 down into the reservoir, and then your thing, and it lasts like a million times longer.
Wow, that's good to know.
Yeah, at least a million times
longer. It lasts at least, well, there you go. You should do the ad campaign for them. It'll last at least a million times longer than your regular printer.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really good. That's really good.
That's a great ad.
That's really good.
It feels exactly like the last 4 years we've lived through. Just like anyone can say anything.
Anyone can say anything. This whole, like, please don't take anything that he says. You know, that thing they were trying to, like, get approved by the, they're having to try to get some court ruling that to have it be approved that it won't matter what Donald Trump says, tweets, or does. Like, what? It was, I can't get into it. It's so nefarious. This person must go. I said to Jeremy last night, I said, do you know who's volunteering to be a poll worker? And Jeremy said, Barton. And I said, yes, because Barton is literally like Prince Charming. I mean, he's literally like Prince Charming. He's
Can you imagine showing up to the polls and Barton giving you help? Like saying, just step over here. I'd be like, and marry me. What's
happening? I would absolutely be like, what is going on? Yeah. I'd be so baffled, confused. Bless all poll workers. Bless all phone bankers. Bless all vote forward mailers. Bless you all. You know, here we are in New York State. It's obviously going to be a Biden-Harris win in New York State. It's just, if you have relatives in Pennsylvania, Texas, Florida, Iowa, Ohio, you know, Arizona.
Alabama, Alaska, Arizona, Kansas, California, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Florida, Georgia, wait. Hawaii, Idaho, Illinois, Indiana.
What was doo-doo do? Is there a state that was in there that you couldn't remember?
No, that's just the song.
Delaware.
Florida, Georgia, Hawaii.
I know, but Delaware, do you know what I mean?
Isn't that Joe Biden?
Like, have you ever been there?
I'm sure I have. Yes, Dover, Delaware.
Ugh. What is there? What's...
I don't remember.
But like, do you know what I mean? I never hear about it.
Delaware, I mean, even Rhode Island, I know something about because, you know, Brown and RISD, but...
Oh, I've been to Rhode Island. I lived in Rhode Island, honey.
Honey. Why, you did a theater festival? Yes.
No. I didn't. But I love. What, you did a theater festival?
Just like... That's your MO for, I did a theater festival there.
I didn't. I did a movie there, and I lived in the Biltmore Hotel. I was 18 years old, and I was, like, drinking like nobody's business. And that's where I would be in Jonathan Brandis's room, and, like, he'd be like, I think I'm going to get cut out of this movie. And I'd be like, no, you won't. And
when you got your contract, what were they going to pay you? What did they pay you?
Oh, I got so fucked on that movie. Are you kidding?
Well, I'm sure because you would have taken anything.
Well, they were A of all. I was like, oh, wow, I'm getting cast in a Miramax movie. I want to get an agent. And they were like, you can't get an agent. And right. I was like, what? And they were like, we have a lawyer who will negotiate your contract.
Oh, man.
And I was like... took a drag of my parliament and thought, well, I've got to keep moving. So I'm going to take this gig.
Yeah. Getting your first movie is precarious. Cause if you had done something that upset them, they would have just been like, get the other gay. You know what I mean?
I mean, except they were absolutely like, this character's not gay. So like, don't be gay. And I was like, okay.
You did full possession.
Yeah. Haven't you heard my straight voice? Hello.
You became the Antichrist and you're like, does this work for you?
How about this? And they paid me $15,000 pre-tax.
That's not good.
No, it was not. It was not good considering that I was in a movie starring... Alec Baldwin, and at this point, Amy Smart was certainly having more of a career, as was Sean Hadassy. But the one who really ended up working out of that film was Gabriel Mann, who would be so iconic in, I think he was in Carnival, but he really showed up something fierce in that incredible TV show called Revenge as her gay best friend. And I remember thinking Gabriel was so just divine. I mean, he was tall, blonde, gorgeous. And he was like, don't come out. Like, just don't come out. 'Cause like it'll really limit your career options. And then I remember being like, homo says what? Which is then when I saw, and then I think there's this whole thing of like, he's dating Jennifer Love Hewitt. And I was like, is he? Gabriel, I love you. Come on the podcast and come out.
That's our new podcast, is outing celebrities on Dance and Stuff.
Totally. I mean, this podcast does have to like just get queer and queer, that's for sure. Like, just queer content, plaz.
Jack, you didn't get paid for that movie.
I really didn't. You know what? I got a residual check recently.
Do you think that Alec Baldwin got $1 million to be in that movie?
It was a low budge. I mean, it was an indie anyway. I mean, this is still when like indies existed and, you know, people were like sledging around. I don't know. It's so funny. I really should compare notes with Parker about like, I wonder what she got paid on House of Yes. I got a residual check recently. I'm looking through it. Who was it from? It was from, I always get stuff from them. Get stuff from these queens too. And I always get stuff from these. Here it is. So incredible. I hope, God, now if I can track down the pay stub of what this was for, this looks like it could be for Outside Providence. So here it goes. I got $12.10 recently.
Amazing.
From Outside Providence.
That's lunch.
Not really. I mean, I guess up here. Not in the city. And then I got a check. When I get these checks, they really stun me. And this, I believe, was absolutely for... it's for Strangers with Candy for 7 cents.
Are you going to cash it? You should take it to Checks for Cash. And they'll be like, the fee is $5. You'll be I'm going to pay you $4.93.
Totally. What was great was, I didn't used to have like a mobile banking app or whatever on my phone. So I would like take my checks and like put them in the slot. And this, any of like the 25 cent and below ones would always just come back. They'd be like, can't deposit it. Not worth it. Tear it up.
Cannot.
It really would. And so I remember having like a stack of them that I think equaled like, you know, $1.50. And there was someone begging for change, so I gave them to him.
That's nice.
Yeah. I was like, go deposit these. Go take them for checks for cash.
Checks for cash.
All right. Well, time to go to bed.
Yeah, everybody watch Fall for Dance if you want to. I think it's $15. You can also not watch Fall for Dance and give us $15.
Absolutely. Become a Patreon to our show if you are enjoying the random. And we are going to continue with random and keeping it queer and staying here and not being in fear.
And yeah, keep it queer, stay right here, not in fear, dance and stuff.
And we look forward to next week. All right.
whatever that may be.
Whatever that may be. Well, we know what it's going to be.
But it won't be possession because we already did it.
It won't be possession. We know what it's going to be. It's a surprise, ladies and gentlemen, and more will be revealed. All right. We loves you.
Ooh, Halloween surprise. Good night.